Hey everybody, it's Chris Aiken from Aftershocks reminding you that if you want to see the interviews, see the artists, and see Matt and I ramble on with the artists, subscribe to us on YouTube. Just go to the link bit.ly/AftershocksPod1, the number one. So bit.ly/AftershocksPod1. And you can subscribe and see all of our videos in this video cast. And let's just move right along here. Things are happening here.
Oh, they are.
Sarah from Armored Saint, of course. Armored Saint has a brand new release.
Hi.
Punch the Sky. And Joey, welcome to Aftershocks, man.
Thank you for having me. It's glad to be here.
Sorry about the confusion, man. It was like literally you and Conley popped up at the exact same time. And I was like, oh, shit.
I was actually just trying to see. I was in a different part of my house and I was going to see what the connection was like. And it was
okay.
It was pretty bad. So the audio was just cutting in and out. So I said, All right, the hell with it. And I hung up and came over someplace else. I was just checking I was trying to crash the party, actually. Let's be frank.
Nice. Well, Joey, obviously, man, you have this great new release, Armored Saint, Punch in the Sky. It is, I'm just going to say it. It's Armored Saint, and that's about all you need to say. You don't really need to say it's better than this or worse than this or anything. Armored Saint is Armored Saint. You guys are 35 years of consistency, man, which as a fan makes it so welcoming just to get Armored Saint music.
That's great to hear. I mean, you know, we have been doing this a long time, and, you know, the fact that we hear comments like that is cool for us. You know, we've been spending our whole career kind of trying to create what our sound is. And for the longest time, we don't think we really knew what it was. So we're stoked on this new record. You know, we feel really proud about the songwriting and the production and the performances and everything. So, you know, it's funny with our records, each one is a little different than the one that came before it. Just a little bit. But you know, and so this one's really no exception in that case. But we're super stoked on it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you mentioned the production and I wanted to bring that up right off the bat, because that's, if there's anything that is a, I don't want to say a major change, but a strong improvement from the last release, it is the production. And I don't know if it's just you've gotten better as a production guy or the people you're working with have gotten better, but the sound is just arena sounding, man. It's a big, big sound that comes out, that blows the headphones off of your head, man. It's fantastic.
That's great. You know, I was going for something a little wetter and bigger, more epic sounding. It's funny you mentioned that, because I actually on purpose went to work with the same exact people we worked on with Wind Hands Down. Okay. So Josh Newell recorded the drums with us, Bill Matoria did the guitars, and then in the end, I did some recording with John Bush, the singer, here at my studio, but then in the end Jay Rustin mixed it, and Jay Rustin mixed Wind Hands Down as well. So the only thing I really kind of gave Jay a hint on was what I just told you, that kind of want it to be a little wetter and a little, I don't know, bigger kind of, if you will. And so Jay knocked it out of the park. You know, it sounds epic. And, you know, I probably went maybe a little overboard with the overdubs and the production value, you know, special effects, and just there's tons of parts and it's just layers and layers, and sometimes it's just a wall of sound, and that was done on purpose. So yeah, I mean, we're stoked with this record.
Yeah. No, yeah, Joe, you know, what I really like about it, you know, we interviewed John about a month ago or so, and to me, it's definitely, I think, a little more, you know, straightforward and no nonsense sort of meat and potatoes sort of Armored Saint. I mean, it's got, I dig more catchier, you know, vocals and hooks, and maybe it's just me getting older, you know, I'm preferring simpler things in general, but I really do enjoy sort of that simpler and more, you know, catchy approach that you have kind of going on this record. I mean, are you guys as a band now, are you at a place, you know, now in your career where you feel like maybe, you know, you've experimented obviously a lot over your career. Do you feel like you've experimented enough, you know, to show the listeners and fans what you can do as a band, both sonically and technically? And now maybe you just want to kind of get down to the bare bones and play some sort of straightforward metal and sort of simplify things a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think each time we go to write, you know, I always look at it as this kind of like this grand experiment, you know, what can we do this time that we didn't do last time? And how can we, you know, how can I put the knowledge that I gained over the last 5 years into this new record? So I'm always challenging myself in that way. So, you know, going into it, that was it wasn't a conscious thing that John and I talked about, but it was something that was it was kind of subconscious within me, was that I wanted to see if I could make another record that was huge and epic, but can I do it with less? Can I do it with shorter songs? Can I do it with, you know, simpler arrangements, you know, simpler parts, and really leave a really great open canvas for John to shine? Because John sounds amazing on this record.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was part of my goal as well, was to make sure that he had a great place to totally shine and let him be melodic and simple too. So yeah, part of it is you're right with part of it. Like I say partly because we don't really go into these things with a real agenda. John and I don't talk about very much about what we're going to do, songwriting, what style or direction or any of that stuff. We really want it to be genuine and natural and organic. So we really don't talk about things that much. We just kind of like, I put some things out there and see what his feedback is. And then we just start letting the ball roll, and we get the end result are these songs.
Yeah, no, they're great, man. And you know, one thing you guys obviously continue to do on this record, as you have throughout your whole career, is you add you added a lot of those unique sounds and instrumentation to the music that the band is, you know, obviously well known for. I mean, I know the record starts off with that Celtic Ilion pipes that you got on Standing on the Shoulders of Giants. You've got some Indian flute on there. You got, you know, the marching snare drum. I mean, so I think it's great you guys continue to, you know, obviously add those different elements, because it almost wouldn't be, I think, an Armored Saint record without it, you know?
I never really thought of it that way. But I guess I see your point. I be honest with you, it's not a formulaic thing with me anyway. It's more like, I think we first really tapped into it on Tribal Dance, on Symbol of Salvation,
right,
with that intro. And so that was really the kind of the first major leap into like having other world instruments mixed in with what we do. And you know, as fans of music, all band members, I can safely say that we all listen to a lot of different kinds of music, so we have influences that are pretty wide ranging. So any opportunity to bring in other influences or things that we like, we're all about that, you know. And I just think it adds a really cool, unique flair to something that might otherwise be a little ordinary, you know.
Sure. Yeah. You know, and going just quickly too back to, you know, Chris brought up before about, you know, the production and you being a producer. I mean, that's obviously one of the most consistent things that, you know, it's been going on with the band since you got back together in 2000, as you've produced, you know, all the records. I mean, do you feel any pressure, you know, or, you know, just for the fact that if things, you know, if the band members, rest of the guys are like, you know, not happy with certain things, you feel sort of that pressure that, you know, if it doesn't work out that way where everyone is, you know, really liking what's going on, that, you know, now all of a sudden sort of the fingers pointed at you as the guy who maybe didn't do what, you know, everyone was hoping you'd do. I mean,
he didn't do his job right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much.
He failed. You let us down. Yeah, I mean, of course, that there's a pressure there. You know, I'm representing the band. I'm not just representing me. You know, it's the name Armored Saint. So I don't take it lightly at all. I am, you know, the guys will tell you that I can be stubborn and I can be, you know, bullheaded when I have something in my mind and I want it to be that way. But I'm also smart enough, I think, to be able to step back every now and then and say, hey, I need help with this, you know, like I'm not 100% sure. What do you guys think? You know, so I think that's probably one of my strengths is I'm able to step outside quite often and take an objective look at everything. But yeah, I do feel, you know, it's this weird, this thing, this pressure, it is there, but it's something that I really thrive on. I must be like a masochist or something because I like the pressure. I love the challenge. Mm-hmm. I sort of view producing and engineering even to some extent as troubleshooting, you know, trying to whittle away at, you know, you have a set goal in the end and you just get rid of all the blockades in order to get there. So I love that kind of stuff. It's like a puzzle, you know.
Right.
So I find it really challenging. And, you know, I think I've gotten better over the years too, you know, just with doing it. You learn from people you work with and just by experience.
Right. Sure. Definitely. Now, Joey, I watched the live stream show from, was that last week? I guess it was. And I got to tell you, musically, it felt like you guys had been on tour for 6 months. You guys just seemed like you were right in the pocket and it was just pounding, pounding, pounding. It was fantastic. The times in between songs felt very awkward. And John clearly felt like he didn't know what to do. Yeah. You know, what was that like for you guys to play in such a strange environment without fans? Because I'm assuming that's the first time other than in the rehearsal room you've ever done that.
Well, and there's been a few shows in our career, mind you, on tour, where we've had the same amount of people in the venue. We've had a few stinkers along the way. So it was reminiscent of those times, but not too many, but you know, it's happened.
Right.
But yeah, it was weird at first. You know, we went into it not really knowing what exactly to expect, but our mindset was we rehearsed pretty well. We rehearsed like 4 days, 5 days before and hammered out everything. And we just kind of went in there and I said to the guys, I go, let's just have fun, you know, let's just play like we're in rehearsal and just have a good time, play the songs and play to the cameras if you want, you know, like those are eyes, you know, the eyes are people all over the world, but the cameras are the eyes. So play to them, you know. I think it took a few songs for us to kind of like get comfortable. But you know, by the third or fourth song, I think we were sweating and we were, you know, feeling good and just having fun with the tunes. And it was really fun playing four brand new songs because, you know, we're stoked on the new record, so we wanted to play new material. That was great. And John and I had talked about this before we went on, and I said, he's like, I don't know what I'm gonna say, and I said, just be you, you know, just right. Do your thing, you know. And I thought he was pretty good, you know. I mean, the weirdest thing is when the song ends and then it's like, you just like you're falling off a cliff. Like,
right.
It's just nothing, zero. It's not a sound. It's a very weird feeling. You know, I think he kind of lightened up at times. And that's why we like, you know, I thought that his raps were, they got better as the night went on. And he started to just get comfortable. And I think in his frame of mind, he was like, I'm just going to talk to people like the way that I talk to them when I'm on stage. And the weird thing for him was that there was no set of eyes looking back at him. He couldn't make any eye contact. But he was just trying to be like, you know, what he would say if someone was there. And, you know, it was awkward.
Yeah.
But we had a great time with it.
It felt a little the one moment, I'm not trying to shit on it because I really enjoyed it, but man, when he told the pizza delivery guy story at the end and just he told it and like you guys didn't even react to it, I was like, ooh, hurry up and play.
Yeah. You know, it's like, it's one of those things, like a comedian on stage, and like a tough crowd, man.
Yeah.
Tough crowd. My bandmates aren't even laughing.
Yeah, yeah. No question. Well, yeah. Joey, you know, it's no secret. You are the busiest guy, I think, in the band. I mean, you obviously have Fate's Warning, and seems like every other band in the world seems to have a spot for you to play with them, a song here, a tour there, whatever. It seems like you stay busy. So how do you and the band come up with and decide when it's time to do Armored Saint? Is it just that somebody has a collection of songs they feel is right? Or do you just get to a point where you're like, damn, we haven't done anything in X amount of years? How do you decide that, okay, it's time to prioritize this once again?
Yeah, well, you know, we've been on this weird 5-year schedule since 2010. And it's totally by chance, not planned out that way. It's just the way it's worked out. And so I think that this time it was, again, we couldn't have planned it this way. It was too arbitrary the way that the schedule worked out. But I think what happened this time, and every time it's a little different, but I think this time in particular, we came off the road. We had done, mind you, for When Hands Down, we did a lot of touring. We did maybe more touring than we've done in like 25 years or 30 years or something. We did a lot of dates for that record. And so it was sometime around the end of 2017. I believe we were coming off maybe a Queensryche tour. We were supporting them. And we came off the road and we said, look, we told our agent, just don't look for any more dates. We're going to take some time off and decompress and see what happens. So that's where we left it. We didn't say to each other, let's stop and write a record. We just said, let's just take a break for a little bit. And so it was really only a couple of months after that that I think I was probably doodling around. Mind you, I don't write on the road. I'm terrible at it. I much prefer to stop, chillax, decompress, right, and then open up and see what happens. So that's what I did, and started fooling around with riffs or whatever. And I started out with a couple of things in December of 17. And then by January, February, probably have written 2 or 3 songs. And that's when I recorded demos, and then I sent them off to John. And still, we haven't, even at that point, we hadn't said to each other, yeah, we're writing now. We still didn't do that. We still wanted to feel like natural. So he got really stoked on the first couple of songs. We got together, we made demos of 3 songs, probably finished them by March or something. And then at that point, we kind of looked at each other and said, oh, this is cool. Let's keep going, you know? And it was still only like, it might've been a couple of months after that even, that we finally told the other guys, oh yeah, by the way, we started writing for the next round. You might want to send your ideas in. But you know, the process takes a long time with us. We didn't finish writing until the fall of 2019. Okay. So that's a long time. And that's pretty normal for us. That's been our trend in the last 15 years. We don't have like a real schedule. We don't have a gun to our head from the label. We're not on a schedule for anything. They pretty much tell us, when you guys are ready and you have a record, let us know. And we're like, okay, that's amazing. You know, like to work in that with that freedom is like the best thing ever for us. Mm-hmm. So we take our time and we do it in between hockey practice and dropping the kids off at school and, you know, just family life and regular life, you know. So we just kind of do it whenever we find time to do it. And that's kind of why it takes 14 to 18 months to write a record for us. But that's in a nutshell kind of how it works.
Nice. Yeah. And Joe, you know, I think one of the, you know, greatest attributes about Armored Saint is that you guys, you've practically had the same lineup now for, I mean, almost, you know, the 40 years of the band's existence. You know, I mean, even with Dave's tragic passing back in 90, you want to replace him with Jeff, who's still there now for the last 30.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see that too often where a band has the same members for that amount of time. And I know you guys, obviously, you guys have been friends, I know, since childhood, which explains, obviously, a lot of the tight bond between all you. But still, 40 years is 40 years. It's an amazing feat, regardless of the history, you know, and the dynamics of the band. What are some of the key, I guess, ingredients or, you know, things that has allowed you guys to really remain together, you know, through all those peaks and valleys? And because to me, it seems like there would probably wouldn't be an Armored Saint at all if for some reason one of the five of you weren't there.
Well, that's true. And all of what you said is right on the money, pretty much. And I guess first thing I'll say is it ain't easy. That's for sure.
Sure.
Especially when you've had guys in the band who have known each other since we were 8 years old. Mm-hmm. That's insane. So
yeah,
our connection, we're like brothers and like family. And as anybody knows, if anyone's done any kind of business with a family member, it's like the worst thing mm-hmm. ever. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult. Like slight little insults cut to the core, man. It hurts. So those things are the things you have to be careful with. You have to respect that we are greater than our sum. The mm-hmm. sum is greater than we are, I rather was mean to say. Mm-hmm. So we have to have respect for the Armored Saint name, and we try to keep that clear. You know, we try to respect each other, and when we were 19 years old, when we first started out, we were like all cut from the same cloth. You know, we were the same. We were like this little tribe, this little gang, you know. Mm-hmm. Over the years, though, honestly, you know, some of us got married, some of us moved away out of town, and our lives changed and some of our interests changed. So this is true for us, too. You know, we are different people now than we were when we were 19 years old, but we have this lineage that we always try to remember, and that's the Armored Saint music and the name. So that thing is something that you really got to respect, and you got to hold it really dear and just pay respect for it, you know. I mean, sure. It would be a drag if it got nasty and like one guy in the band said, I'm leaving and I'm taking the name, and then it was like John Bush or something, like John Bush and like four other guys you never even heard of, and he's right. calling an Armored Saint. That would just be the worst thing ever, you know. And John would be the first one to tell you that too. I'm just using him as an example, but if any of us did that, it would just be awful. So, you know, it's not an easy thing, but we are proud of the fact that we have that, you know, that that unit is intact, and we take pride in having that.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. You know, and I'm also hearing great things about Armored Saint, the movie that's due to come out sometime, I believe, in the near future as well. Me and Chris, our good friend, and my Shockwave Skull Sessions partner, Bob Nalbandian, yeah. He's featuring it. He said to say hi to you, by the way. He knew you were coming on tonight. But
hi, Bob.
But
way back with Bob. That's cool.
Yeah, he talks about you guys all the time, man. But unlike a lot of documentaries that we do see these days, you know, yourself and the rest of the band, you guys aren't really directly tied to the film from what I hear. I mean, you've obviously participated in it, but it's not really being funded or driven by the band. That's correct, right?
Yeah. The truth is that the idea came to us from a friend of ours. He's a longtime friend of ours and a fan also, but his name is Russell Charrington, and he's from the UK. He's a film he was a film student for many years. Him and I worked on some of his indie films. I wrote some music for his shorts and stuff. And then he went on to become a teacher, a professor at a film school. So he's like just all about film, and he's so into it. So he came to us with this idea a couple of years ago. And I said, I mean, we all said, that's awesome. You know, if you want to tell the story, that's cool. And then, you know, along the way, in further discussions, I kind of had to, I mean, I gave him my opinion from my point of view. Was I said, look, I don't want us to micromanage this because this should be your story. You know, this should be your interpretation of what you want to say. You know, otherwise it's a movie that we're making about ourselves. Like, hey, look how cool we are, you know.
Sure, yeah.
I don't want to do that. You know, he's been doing a great job. We, of course, are involved we've done tons of interviews with him, and we supplied him with all kinds of media, old footage and photos and flyers and all kinds of stuff. And we hooked him up with people that were kind of in our network that that he could go interview as well. Bob mm-hmm. being one of them. Mm-hmm. He talks with our first manager, Cliff Bernstein from Q Prime. Mm-hmm. He talks with a couple. He talks with Lars and with James from Metallica, obviously. Talks with Scott Ian. Talks with Ron Lafitte, who was a early friend of ours. A couple of our producers, Max Norman is in there.
Okay.
So okay. it's. I haven't actually seen anything. All I've seen is the same trailer that all of you have seen. So mm-hmm. I haven't.
Okay.
I haven't really seen anything much. But from what I gather, he's finishing up in the editing stages, and I think that he's hoping to get it out in the spring, okay. like finished. And I don't know what he's going to do with it, to be honest with you, but I think he's trying to get it done by spring. And so hopefully the rest of the world can check it out. And it should be a really cool thing for fans. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably a lot of stuff that people don't know about our story. And, you know, it should be cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Out, man.
Yeah.
Well, Joey, you know, as we mentioned before, you obviously play in Fate's Warning as well, and new Fate's Warning release, which we won't get too far into, other than I'll tell you it's the best thing you guys have done in 20 years. It's
wow.
It's an amazing, amazing listen. And,
cool. Thank you.
And I'm curious for you, you know, looking at Armored Saint and Fate's Warning, Armored Saint is more of a grittier metal band. You know, where Fate's Warning is much more of a virtuoso type of a band, which sure. kind of says that you as a player are a virtuoso that can play gritty music. You know, how do you balance your playing between the grittier side and the more developed progressive style that you bring to Fate's Warning?
Well, I'm a firm believer as a player. I'm a firm believer of the song will dictate what it needs. So I have known that for a long time, even before I was in Fate's Warning. Mm. And so I know, as a bass player anyway, it's my job to, what does the song need? Give what the song needs. And don't give it too much more, you know, because now you're being selfish, you know.
Right.
And I don't want to be a selfish player like that at all. I always want to serve the song. So whatever the song is asking for, that's what it gets. You know, Armored Saint music is, obviously, like you pointed out, it's much more grittier and it's more simplistic in that way, more Neanderthal, we can say, which is cool. I mean, it's fine. It's that's where the energy and the aggression comes in, you know. Right. And when I joined Fate's Warning in 96, you know, I was a different bass player then. I really had to, you know, up my game. I had to improve. I had to just get better. And at that time I was working with Mark Zonder, who was the drummer on A Pleasant Shade of Grey. Mm-hmm. And, that was like a huge learning curve for me to get on board with that band. And Fates has made me a better player. It's made me a better songwriter. It's made me more knowledgeable about how to use the theory that I know. So, you know, that's where I think the separation comes into play in my mind. Like, to answer your question is, you know, I mean, there's a lot of times in Fate's music where the bass should be simple, and it is, and it should be that, because it's got to serve the song and the parts, you know. But it's like when it comes time to fly, you got to have your shit together, you know. Mm-hmm. And like I said, this was something I kind of learned by being in Fate's Warning. I wouldn't necessarily say I was up to par when I first joined in 96. So it's been, I've been going to the Fate's Warning School of Bass for almost 22 years or something right now.
Right.
Something like that.
And I would imagine tag teaming with Bobby makes you stay at the top end of your game.
Oh my God.
He's ridiculous.
Oh my God. I am. I've played with some great guys through Fates. Nick DiVirgilio as well.
Yeah.
Portnoy did a few shows with us. Mm. I mean, Bobby, I'm playing with Bobby for like, I don't know, 10, 15 years now. It's like, and I mean, insanity. It's totally insane. So you really gotta, it's challenging, man. you gotta really think. You gotta be on point, and it's not always easy.
I guess.
All those guys I mentioned, they're all they're all amazing in their own way, and they've all, I've taken something from each one of them that's different, and it's been a great run.
No question, man. Well, Joey, I as a fan, and again, I'm a fan, you know, I have noticed, and I'm sure you've heard it or people have said it to you.
It wasn't me.
No, but the stock of Armored Saint seems higher than it's ever been before. Just seems like the band is just transformed into, you know, one of the elite bands that when people start talking about metal now, from classic metal that came up from the 80s and whatnot, Armored Saint is one of those bands that gets mentioned more and more. And I know it probably has some things to you guys' ties with Metallica, and it has obviously John with Anthrax and whatnot. You know, the pieces, parts have raised, but for whatever reason, Armored Saint, the profile has been raised. Do you guys revel in that, or do you wish that just more people would have figured it out when they were buying records in the late 80s and early 90s and giving you a platinum record?
I don't know. It feels pretty sweet right now, actually. And I think what you're saying, you're not the first person who said that to me. I don't necessarily think that I believed that. I am much more modest in how I see ourselves. But I do think that there is a little bit of truth to that now, especially now. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that is, but there might be a lot of reasons for it. But to answer your question directly, it feels pretty good. You know, it feels pretty good. Let me rephrase that. It feels great,
right,
that 40 years into our career, right, that there's a lot of fans and critics too that are enjoying what we're doing, and they want to hear new music from us. They mm-hmm. don't. It's not like they discounted everything after Symbol of Salvation and that's it, you know, like right. that was their last record and I can't listen to anything after that, you know. It's almost the opposite in a way, where people are like looking forward to the music that we're making, and the response has just been pretty overwhelming. And for us to know this or to feel this 40 years in is sure. like completely mind-blowing. This is, to us, this is success. We never imagined 40 years ago that we'd be today talking about a new record that everyone's, you know, seems to be loving, and, you know, getting on top 10 lists and number one records of the month or whatever. I mean, it's just, it's beyond what we ever even imagined, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The reason, I'm not sure why there's a resurgence or a renaissance of sorts. It might have partly due to the fact that maybe we've been consistent, like in the mm-hmm. last, well, again, 5 years apart consistent, but
right.
we've released three records in the last 15 years. We've done a lot of touring in that time also. In the 80s, we missed so many opportunities, especially in Europe. We never even toured Europe at all in the 80s. And that was a big travesty for us. It's a big thorn in our side. And so ever since 2001, when we got back together for Revelation, we made it a mission to go back, to go to Europe and to spend sure. as much time there as we could, and just be a touring act and let people see us live on stage. So I think that those things we've kind of like piecemealed and worked our way through the past 20 years, recent 20 years
mm-hmm.
of just being in people's faces and making new music and I think getting better at songwriting. I mean, I don't want to pat myself too hard on the back, but we feel like we're making music that is good. I mean, we like it, mm-hmm. and we're happy with what we're doing.
Sure.
The response seems to be great. So I think all those things kind of combined together has made it seem like we have this resurgence of sorts. And maybe the internet's part of this too, because
yeah.
you got to remember that too, because before that, we didn't really have any presence on the internet at all.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that part of it too. Social media plays a big part in it, and
sure.
you know, there's that too. So,
you know,
but it's great. If it's It's awesome.
I would definitely agree with you about the internet too. I know with my other show, the Classic Metal Show, Armor Saint's a core band. I mean, it's a band that's requested pretty much every week. We're playing stuff every week, and we're not just playing Can You Deliver and, you know, the old stuff. We're definitely playing Left Hook from Right Field, and cool. We're playing, you know, the brand new stuff that we have, you know, Sailor cool. Shoulder Giants and stuff like that. I mean,
great.
And that's by request. That's not us just saying, okay, we got to pump this new Armored Saint record. It's the fans hear it and they want to hear it.
That's great.
But I do think that the internet, I think for you guys, the one negative that you had back in the late 80s and the 90s was just straight up exposure. I mean, other than Symbol, I'll be honest, I discovered you from Symbol, from MTV and from, you know, people playing it around me. But you know, the first I came into, I've discovered the other albums after I discovered Symbol, which is how I think most people did.
Yeah.
This current generation, the last 20 years of people, the 30-year-olds and back, they're not having to find you anymore. You're on Spotify, you're on you know, the web. There's videos on YouTube, and you know, you get into the playlists or you get into the XM, you know, thing of the day or whatever. And I just think that has really helped people realize that there was this stable, great band that maybe they missed the first time around.
Yeah. And, you know, kudos too has to go to our label, Metal Blade. You know, we have a long history with them, and, you know, they're very savvy these days, and they've rolled with all these, with the punches, with new technology and streaming and all this stuff. So, they've been a big part of that as well. But what you're saying is true. I mean, it's funny because when we came out of the gate in 84 with March of the Saint, we were just a bunch of punks. I mean, we were 20, 21 years old. We got a major label deal. We hadn't even played 50 gigs yet in our entire lives. And then we're on this major label, and we spent stupid amounts of money on this record. And we've lost control, basically. We had all these people putting their hand on us, and managers and people at the label, like, you should do this, you should do that. Oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. You can't go to Europe. You don't make money. It's a loss. So we're not going to Europe. And we were like, what? What? So, but it's funny because March of the Saint came out, and it actually did really well for a sophomore effort. For a first record, it did great. But then, you know, it was like, as soon as something changed at MTV, like MTV back then was the be all end all.
Right.
And as soon as their rotation, I mean, their genre, they're playing metal changed between 84 and 86. Mm-hmm. And suddenly it was like, oh, it was kind of hard to get on MTV at that point. And then that was just, we went dark. We just went like completely dark. And the label, you know, didn't know what to do with us, or manager didn't know what to do with us. And then that's when we kind of started to get into obscurity, and we stayed in obscurity pretty much until Symbol of Salvation. Because when Symbol came out, if you remember, MTV was a thing then.
Sure.
And the Headbangers Ball was a thing. And we got a lot of airplay for Rain of Fire, our first video got a lot of airplay. So we benefited from that at that moment. But then, of course, you know, as luck would have it, other things happened. John left to join Anthrax, and the band, whatever, we fell apart internally, and the rest is history. But you guys watch the movie to find out the rest.
There we go.
nice. There we go. Well, Joe, I just got one more question for you, Joey. You're going back to your play, and you finger pick your bass, which has universally been looked down upon within sort of metal circles over years. I mean, I could probably count on one hand probably the number of metal bassists that finger pick, by Steve Harris, Frank Bello, Robert Trujillo, maybe Geezer Butler. I mean, those are just the four I could think off the top of my head. And a lot of metal bands won't even allow a lot of finger picking bassists into the fold, you know. I mean, and it really has nothing to do, I think, with the sound. It's more the way maybe they don't like the way it looks, right? Because it's never been sort of considered a metal look, I guess. What's your opinion on that? Why do you think that is? Why do you think bands don't want to have finger picking bassists in their band? You know, they just don't. Know.
That's a good question.
You know?
I guess I always sort of associated it with, I sort of feel like that started around when the thrash movement came up.
Okay.
And bands were getting away from being sounding and looking like Iron Maiden, and they were getting closer to, then the thrash thing was taking off and it was a different thing. It's funny though to mention thrash, because Metallica pretty much was one of the forefront runners, and who played bass? Cliff Burton, with his fingers.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot, it's funny and interesting to note though that a lot of bass players after that played with picks, and I think I always associated it with that the band wanted it to sound more like guitar, like the bass player just had to mimic what the guitar player was doing, and I think that they felt like it made the riffs sound more aggressive, I guess, if you will. And that's what I think, what I thought the reason was. I didn't really think that it was an aesthetic thing, but you might be right about that too. Like, you know, you don't want some like really heavy thrashy guy, you know, band with killer riffs, and then you got this bass player who's holding his bass up really high and he looks like a jazz guy, you know, like, that's not going to fly.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, it's not to say that you can't have that, because there's a lot of bands that are really heavy, you know, like Between the Buried and Me is a good example. I mean, those guys are super heavy and awesome and great, and their bass player plays with his fingers, and he's a great player. He's amazing. Sure. They're all amazing.
Sure. But, yeah.
You know, I don't know. That is a funny thing. I think maybe there might have been some of that in the 80s, maybe, and maybe in the early 90s, you know, like bands that were coming up, and there's like, you're not playing with your fingers, you know. The riff goes like this, and it plays with a pick, you know. And I have no problem playing with a pick. I mean, I use a pick once in a while. I use a pick on Standing on the Shoulders of Giants on the record.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
And I did it because maybe I'm on this conversation. I felt like it added I was trying to go for a Phil Lynott feel in that song. So Phil played with a pick, and I love Phil. Mm-hmm. He's a great bass player, but he has this kind of feel to it. So I tried it with my fingers while I was recording, and it just wasn't doing it for me. I'm a guitar player too, so I can play with a pick. So I grabbed my pick, and I said, oh, this feels way better, you know. I don't really need to do it live, but when I was making the record, I felt like it added something aesthetically to the sound that was better for me.
Sure.
Okay.
Don't pay Matt any mind, Joey. He just put you in the same category as Steve Harris, Cliff Burton, and
hey,
I'd say that's a good.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I play bass and I use my fingers, so it's all good.
<I'm not laughs> worthy. Yeah. But I've been playing with fingers for such a long time that for me, I personally prefer fingers over pick. But that's just my preference, you know. The way that I feel the bass guitar and the way that it works with the drums, specifically the kick drum and the snare drum, I feel more fluid with fingers. The pick for me is meant for other things, such as what I explained about Giants, or if there's like an AC/DC kind of vibe and it's just like chunking eighth notes or something, give me the pick. You know, I'll pull out the full on Cliff Williams and go for it, you know.
Sure.
Like I said earlier, like whatever the song wants, the song gets.
Right. Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. Well, thanks, Joey, so much for coming on. And for our listeners out there, obviously, 2 days from now, October 23rd, this Friday, Punch in the Sky comes out on Metal Blade. Everybody check it out. Are you guys planning on any other like live streams or doing any of that in the future?
You know, we actually had a really good time with it, that we have loosely talked about doing it again, especially if there's no opening up on the horizon. Like, how long are we going to wait before we're going to start booking some shows? You know, we could be waiting until December, and then we could be waiting forever.
Sure.
So we loosely talked about doing it again, since we had such a good time with it, you know. We could play, we only played like an hour and 10 minutes or something, an hour and 15 minutes. So we could do a whole other set of 12 completely different songs and it would be different and it would be cool. So, if we do something, it would be something along those lines, and it's not out of the realm of possibility. We might do that.
Very cool. All right, we'll look out for it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for having me. It's been a blast, and thank you.
Yeah. Right, appreciate it, Joey. Thanks so much for coming on, bud.
Cool. Thank you, too.
Take care, buddy.
You guys be safe.
You too. Thanks.
Right. Thanks for listening to Aftershocks. For more episodes, go to our website at www.aftershockspodcast.com. Visit us on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages for more news and information on the podcast. And be sure to subscribe, listen to, and review all episodes on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other podcast platforms. For your music listening pleasure, visit our website or go to www.shockwavesradio.com. For all comments and questions, please email us at info@aftershockspodcast.com.